to another edition of the 2-4 and Hoops podcast. I'm Parker Lovett, and I am joined by Tristan Wentworth today. How are you this morning, Tristan?
I'm doing all right. I'm enjoying the sunny weather in San Francisco. It was 40 degrees last night, but now it's, you know, in the 60s, so it's not so bad.
Yeah. Better than Spokane, where it's 40 degrees maybe on a good day in the winter. So pretty horrible, but that gives me plenty of time to stay inside and watch basketball, which is something I really, really love to do. Great game last night between the Celtics and the Rockets, 123-120 victory for Houston. That extends their winning streak out to 15. Pretty crazy times that they're leading the West, and then there's the Warriors, and followed by that is Portland, who's really been a kind of a surprise sitting third in the West. So what have you been watching?
Well, I watched bits of that game last night, and I heard about some late game heroics from Ariza, and God, their record with Chris Paul in the starting lineup is pretty insane. I think they've lost one or two games.
It's pretty incredible, and I think they're really emerging as kind of a threat to the Warriors. Now, I think so.
I have some friends that are Warriors fans, and they kind of act like they're not fazed. And I mean, when the Warriors turn it on, I still think they have the highest upside, just because of the star power. But the Rockets with home court advantage is scary, man. James Harden is a force to be reckoned with right now. You know, I don't know how many players are better than him on offense, if any.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And they have switchable wings on the perimeter, and Mbah Mute and, you know, Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, all these guys, they can play kind of a small ball that attacks the Warriors. They have Joe Johnson now. So they're a dangerous team. And like you said, I don't think that Warriors fans should overlook them, especially if they get the number one seed, because, you know, the last thing you want is to be going to a game seven on the road, even though, you know, that, you know, I still wouldn't bet against the Warriors in that situation, but wouldn't want to be there as a fan. Probably be really stressful for me.
No, I agree, especially like you said. I mean, last year, defense was still kind of their Achilles heel. They could score with the best of them, but they couldn't get stops when it mattered. But they have a top 10 defensive ranking, and like you said, they kind of revamped those wing players that can guard multiple positions and can match up with the Warriors, especially with small ball lineups.
Definitely. So another thing that I found interesting is kind of a team that I watch a lot being up here in the Pacific Northwest is Portland. You know, they're third out west as we record right now, with a record of 37-26. So they're obviously way behind the juggernauts of Houston and Golden State. But it's pretty crazy to see them up there. You know, Dame Lillard has been playing really well. I've been watching some of his games, and he's money down the stretch. Guy just nails big shots, and CJ is. He's so hard to guard. They just have enough pieces now. I like some of their front court players. In particular, you know, Nurkic is solid, and then they got Ed Davis has looked nice. And when he comes in off the bench, kind of gives them a different feel. And then obviously
he's,
my boy
Zach really
Collins.
He's been one of the best offensive rebounders in the league for a while. And he's, you know, it's crucial to have a player like that coming off the bench.
Yeah, and offensive rebounding is interesting because, you know, there's some people that argue that, oh, it's inefficient or teams shouldn't do it because they want to stop transition opportunities in this age of the three ball. But, you know, if you're elite at it, such as Ed Davis is, you know, that's pretty crazy because he can really bring a lot of value in any extra possessions that they can get three balls or you know, easy opportunities in the paint. So, He's been really valuable, and then him and Zach Collins together, kind of an interesting young lineup. So we'll see where they're going and how they end up finishing. But it is cool to see that they're third in the standings right now.
I totally agree. Portland's an interesting team. I was low on them just because I kind of saw that backcourt and I thought, well, you have two offensive minded players that do kind of some of the same things, but they're so lethal that I think they're able to make up for some of their defensive woes. I know they started out the year and they had a pretty good defense, and it's still, I think they're middle of the pack, but Dame is just clutch. He's got it runs in his blood, man. I mean, I can't name many players in the league that are more clutch than him. You know, obviously the the famous Game 6 winner against the Rockets. But besides that, he's hitting big shots down the stretch against teams. Even if they come up short against teams, he's one of the best go-to players in the league in the last minute, for sure.
Yeah, he plays with so much, like, swagger out there. And just, I love the whole day and time thing. And, like, he's just money down the stretch. So that's cool to see. And your point about the small backcourt is interesting. That's why I find it so kind of noteworthy that they're this up this far in the standings, because I do have questions about that, and that has definitely been an issue in the past of kind of like, can you win with the two small guards? But maybe they're able to figure it out now, and that if they surround them with good defensive players, you know, that they can get by on both ends, sort of. So that's cool to see. And obviously having two just guys who are so good scoring, like one-on-one individual late game stuff, really gives them an advantage.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, they are high in the standings, but I take that a little bit with a grain of salt, because I think they were the seventh seed or eighth seed not too long ago, and they hold, you know, they're three games up from the Clippers, who are ninth seed, and they're four games up from Utah's in the tenth seed. So there's only four games between the third seed and the tenth seed. And I know Zach Lowe wrote about it, but this truly, I can't remember the last time, you know, there were eight teams vying for six spots. It's going to be pretty exciting coming down here.
Yeah, it is crazy to think about that. And so that, I think that brings up an interesting point about the, you know, the strength of both the Western Conference and how there's so many teams vying for position. There's been a lot of talk recently from Adam Silver and others about potential playoff realignment, and maybe the idea that we need to abolish the conferences and go with kind of a 1-16 sort of seeding. I think that'd be definitely interesting. LeBron was not too happy with that, him being the king of winning the Eastern Conference. But I want to run. I'll give you the standings right now, Tristan, of kind of our where we sit right now and who are the 1-16. So right now, if the playoffs started today and it was like the 1-16, no conferences, we have Houston plays Milwaukee, Golden State Clippers, Philly Toronto, then we have Denver Boston, Portland Oklahoma City, San Antonio Minnesota, Cleveland New Orleans, and then Washington and Indiana. Any of those pique your interest?
Sorry, could you say that one more time? You're saying that these would be the first round matchups for if the conferences were totally abolished. Those are the top 16 teams. So Miami gets bumped out.
Exactly. So the 16th seed in this tournament would be Milwaukee, 15 Clippers, 14 Philly, 13 Denver, 12 OKC, then San Antonio, New Orleans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, it is interesting. You know, I think the there's been a general consensus around the league that the West is stronger than the East, and don't get me wrong, it is. I think at least, you know, the West has two or three elite teams. I mean, San Antonio doesn't have Kawhi right now, but when Kawhi is healthy, I think there's three teams that are a real threat to emerge out of the West. And you know, I think Houston and Golden State is better than any team in the East. It's an interesting discussion. I think it makes it more, I kind of like it. It's an egalitarian mindset to the playoffs. You know, there was losing teams in Philadelphia not too long ago making the playoffs. So I think maybe it would be better for the league. I know Adam Silver has kind of gone back and forth, and he said he'd give it some thought. He's also thought about, you know, lengthening the regular season so teams have more time to rest. And maybe that would close the gap between the East and the West, but I don't know where I stand on it. I like the Western and Eastern Conference. You know, I think there's differences between them, and it's kind of entertaining to watch the best of both clash. But maybe it would be interesting to see a top 16.
Yeah, so you're more of a traditionalist on it. I'm in favor of it overall, and I think one of the things is, so the conferences were used to be really important when travel, you know, when traveling was much harder than it is now, but nowadays, if you have a couple of days off between games and playoff series, it's much easier to get from coast to coast, essentially. But, like, that does bring up, like, people have thrown out the idea, like, what if you had a first-round matchup between, like, Portland and Miami, which is really far away. But already right now, New Orleans is in the Western Conference, and they're, you know, they're pretty far east as far as geographically. So there's already some discrepancy there. So I think it's something that would be reevaluated. I know they need two-thirds of the owners to vote on it, a two-thirds majority. So I don't know how far they are along on that, but it's food for thought and definitely something to watch as NBA fans going forward.
Totally. And I think, honestly, the All-Star, I mean, to your point, I think the All-Star game this year was kind of an answer to that because the West has been dominant. And I think Adam Silver is kind of forward thinking, and he's not stuck in the past. He's not tied to any league rules that have been, grandfathered in over the years. So I think he would be open to that. And I think it could be potentially entertaining. It kind of breaks away the shackles of the East or of the West. And it would be interesting going forward. I mean, the All-Star game was pretty damn good. That's the best All-Star game I've watched in a while. The last 5 minutes were competitive, and that's kind of what you want to see.
Yeah, that worked. The changes in the All-Star game worked, and I think if they televise the draft next year, it's going to be even better. And so that's a good point of, like, Adam Silver isn't tied to these archaic kind of thoughts. He's willing to be forward thinking if it's going to create a better product. And so that's something to keep in mind is if they end up deciding that this creates a better playoffs or makes it more competitive, then we might end up seeing that change be instituted.
Totally. I think people like seeing LeBron in the finals. So if you get rid of the 16 teams, is LeBron going to be in the finals the next 2 or 3 years? I mean, obviously it probably won't happen, but hypothetically, do you see Cleveland emerging as the second team?
This year?
Well, this year and last year. I mean, just kind of there's been an argument that, you know, LeBron is in the East. He's been able to get out of the East because the teams are weaker there. The teams coming out of the West are often tired and they're battling each other, and Cleveland kind of has a cakewalk. Granted, you know, Toronto's been good and Boston's been good, but those teams haven't been good recently in the playoffs. So that's kind of been an argument. Do you think it would have been any different in the past, 2016, 2017?
You know, it's going to sound weird. As you were saying that, I was kind of thinking about it. And I think the one year that they might not have been the second best team in the NBA is actually the year they won the title, like 2016. I think that Oklahoma City team, if they came out of the West, they had a 3-1 lead on the Warriors and then they blew that. I think if they come out of the West with Russ and Kevin Durant, like, that team was really, really good. I think they might have been able to beat that Cleveland team in 2016, which sounds weird because that's the year they also won the title. But other than that, I think LeBron has still been, like, any team that he's on, that's who I'm rolling with in the Eastern Conference. I still think that Cleveland deserved to be there in all of the years that they were there.
Definitely. No, I totally agree. That's an interesting team that you brought up. I mean, I remember watching that Game 6. The Klay Thompson heroics really were – I mean, it was wild. He was hitting shot after shot, tying the game, going ahead, tying the game again. And that Thunder team was scary, man. I mean, talk about, like, length and switchability. They had Westbrook, who was more engaged on defense than he is now. Durant was blocking shots at an all-time rate that year. He was blocking over a shot per game, and that's – I mean, he's gotten better now, but he was already starting to unlock his potential as a rim protector. And then Roberson, who's just, as long and active as anyone. So that was a scary lineup. And Steven Adams gives the Warriors –
Sure.
Problems. He gives everyone problems now.
He's truly an elite.
I think he's an elite center that doesn't get talked about enough.
Physical.
Yeah, so NBA physical. Nerds like us love him. Like, he stats guys love him because he's so efficient. But he's physical. I mean, he's an enforcer, and he has a high IQ. He doesn't play out of his. He knows his role, and he plays it to a T.
Yeah, that Thunder team. I mean, that Thunder team was so scary. We didn't even mention Serge Ibaka as another guy who could block shots. You mentioned Roberson. That was the first time too that year when Durant. That was kind of the first time I realized, like, this guy could be an elite shot blocker. And then we've seen him kind of unleash that to a whole nother level with the Warriors. But definitely interesting thinking there. So you want to move on to something else here?
Sure. You know, something that I was interested about, kind of hot takey, but it is interesting and it kind of is a subjective discussion, but you talk about clutch players. I mean, we're talking about Dame. Kyrie comes to mind. If you were to rank your top five, if you could, on some type of metric that measures clutch performance, which is, you know, getting steals, getting blocks at the end of the game, playing good on-ball defense, but also hitting clutch shots, not turning the ball over, who would be your top five clutch NBA players?
Top five
right now.
This season?
I mean, yeah, this season and last, but like a current ranking.
Let's just do this. Let's just phrase it like this, if you will. If you got one shot to determine your life, like who are your five guys that you want to take in it, basically? Something like
sure.
that.
Sure. Yeah.
Boy. Yeah. You mentioned Dame. He comes to mind. Steph comes to mind. Steph's hit so many big shots. You know, in his MVP season, he had five game winners, and then he had one this year against Dallas where he just stuck a three ball in Dirk's face. But yeah, Kyrie probably right now, like that guy is so clutch, and he is arguably the biggest shot in NBA history. I mean, that might be a little crazy, but it's one of the toughest shots ever, and that was so, so clutch. And then I'd be remiss if I didn't mention LeBron. You know, he can hit clutch shots. And then you also mentioned the defensive aspect, right? Like, you know, he can get you a steal, or obviously he got you the block in the NBA Finals. But, like, plays like that, I mean, he can just turn it on when he needs it.
Yeah. I mean, that block might go down as I mean, it is. That might be the best single play. I mean, I know he had that crazy series against Detroit early on in his career, but in terms of one single moment, that could be it. You know, that could be his defining moment.
Certainly. I mean, having witnessed that play in person, that was an incredible play. Like, that's the most thing.
You were at that game?
Yeah, game seven. I was there, yeah. And I was watching it, and, like, that is just the most incredible play I've ever seen an NBA player make, because it's just the angle on it and how hard he had to come in to get to where he did and honestly pin it up against the backboard. It's honestly kind of terrifying to think about right now. But he's such a clutch player, and, you know, we can't doubt anything that LeBron does on the basketball court. For you, though, give me kind of your clutch, where you're thinking on the clutch scale.
Okay. You know, it sucks Jimmy Butler went down, but I was watching some games where he was putting Minnesota on his back. And he against the Nuggets, I think the Minnesota was down like 10 points midway through the fourth quarter. They were down 12 points earlier on in the game. But possession after possession, he was bringing them back. He was clutch in Chicago. He kind of has that clutch gene. I mean, he had a couple huge blocks. And he had two game, the game was on the line in a game recently, and he had two blocks back to back, which kind of cemented, you know, I think he is Minnesota's best player, and definitely their most clutch player, and one of the most clutch players in the league, in my eyes. So maybe, I mean, Kyrie one, Dame two, after watching what Russ did last year with that OKC team, I mean that 50 point, God, he was wild last year, and he was clutch, and he isn't a great 3-point shooter, but I swear his 3-point percentage goes up if there's a minute left. Steph, you know, Paul George, I have to tell you, on OKC's side, Paul George has been pretty clutch. You know, in a game versus Denver earlier, had they come back and won, they lost it, but Paul George put up 40, and he had a game tying 3-pointer. You know, he had a 3-pointer to bring it to three. He was hitting big shot after big shot. So I guess there's a lot of guys you could go to, but maybe my top five would be Kyrie, Dame, Jimmy Butler, LeBron, and, you know, maybe Steph or Russ or, you know, some of those guys. But Durant is clutch, but he kind of hasn't had that game winning shot in, was that game five? Last year,
game three of the NBA Finals. Yeah, I mean,
yeah. I mean, Anthony Davis is clutch right now. He's playing. He's getting clutch blocks and clutch. He's getting clutch buckets too. So there's a couple exciting clutch players.
That dude is so ridiculously good, Anthony Davis, and he's getting a lot of hype lately, and that's his all well deserved. Another guy, he had a game winner in the last week, was kind of a throwback name, is Dwayne Wade. He's a clutch player. Like, he's hit lots of big shots over the course of his career, and he had a game winner for Miami the other night. He had a really big scoring night, so that's interesting to see. And I know that there's been talk about him kind of as that clutch time offense guy for them. So we'll see where they go down the stretch going forward. But
I was watching that Philly game live, and he, you know, practically single-handedly beat that Sixers team. He played a pretty good game, especially defensively. But yeah, Dwayne Wade is cold-blooded.
Especially with those super nice uniforms they have. All those things are sharp.
They are.
The white ones.
Yeah, those are clean. With a little bit of, there's some baby blue in it or no?
Yeah, they got some cool like Miami. They got some like Miami Vice colors. They're sweet
yeah.
Jerseys.
I like those jerseys.
Yeah, what did you have your favorite jerseys in the NBA? I was thinking about this last night actually, because, and I know this is something that Zach Lowe harped on too, is Boston wears these black and green jerseys. Like, they have some of the best colors in the NBA, some of the best overall jerseys, just classic traditional stuff, and then they wear those ugly black ones. I'm not a fan of those. But do you have any jerseys in the NBA that you really like?
The Warriors, I mean, I'm a Warriors fan, so maybe I'm just a homer, but the Warriors white jerseys with do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's the ones they introduced this season. Those are sweet.
Yeah. Those are clean, man. I mean, the white, and it's like almost a navy blue, but it's the patterning is clean. That's one of my favorite jerseys in the league for sure. I also love, you know what I like? I like the Nuggets had a highlighter series.
Cool.
I don't want to see it every night, but it was pretty clean, man. I liked the highlighter on those young guys. I thought those were clean.
Yeah, I like the Pacers new jerseys too. They just introduced some. And I think those are really cool, and they look solid on the players, you know, like that out there. It just makes sense. So they have cool jerseys, but there's tons of great jerseys in the NBA. I'm kind of a jersey nerd, so.
Yeah. Minnesota's got some cool jerseys too.
Yeah, it's cool to be in the NBA, I guess, because you get to wear all this fancy stuff.
The Milwaukee off-whites. I mean, I'm just going through them now that I'm, you know, thinking, the Milwaukee off-whites are pretty, there's like a cream color.
The cream-colored ones, yeah.
Those are dope, man. I mean, Giannis is scary, but for somehow those, the cream jerseys bring out another element of fear, maybe.
You know who else has some really cool jerseys? Orlando. I know that no one actually watches Orlando, but they have these, like, black ones. Yeah,
those are clean, man. Yeah. Was Aaron Gordon, was that the Aaron Gordon 40-point performance earlier in the year? Was he wearing those? I swear it was.
Maybe. I mostly know him just as a nerd, like, from 2K. They're just super cool, like, Cosmo, like, space magic-y.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know those
are awesome jerseys.
Yeah, they are cool.
Tristan, so one other thing I'm kind of monitoring, and you mentioned it briefly about Kawhi, is this whole – San Antonio situation. They're at 36-27 right now. He's supposed to return in March is kind of the idea. So sometime this month, and hopefully he gets back to his dominant self, because he's really fun to watch, and the Spurs are so much better with him. And I think it would just make these West playoffs a lot more interesting. I think it really affects whoever gets the 2 seed. If San Antonio gets the 3 seed, that could be a very competitive second round series if Kawhi is healthy. So I've been monitoring that, and I hope that Kawhi comes back here pretty soon. What have you seen from the Spurs lately?
Yeah, I mean, they're 2-8 in their last 10. You mentioned it; they've been sliding recently, but with Kawhi, they're still one of the most dangerous teams in the league. And I don't think the injuries. I mean, granted, you know, he's been banged up. The ankle was an issue. Then the shoulder was an issue. Then he had a quad issue. I mean, he's been banged up, and I know he has some differences. Maybe those are a little bit, you know, drawn out now, over-covered. You know, people love to bring up drama. I'm sure Kawhi and the Spurs aren't as, you know, at odds as everyone makes them out to be. But he's not a player that relies on his athleticism. You know, if he comes back a little bit slower, he's still the lead on defense. He still could get a shot off over people. He's still so efficient that I think he could get back in and swing at things, and contribute, even if he's, you know, 85% at the end of this year. But I was watching that Lakers Spurs game, and I'm really like what I see from Lonzo. I was saying it early on in the year. I've kind of been a Lonzo fan. You know, he's top 10 in all major categories, and he's top 5 in most, you know, among rookies. He's 10th in points per game right now. He's 2nd in assists per game. He's 3rd in rebounds per game. He's 2nd in steals, and he's 5th in blocks. People don't give Lonzo his due on defense. You know, he's an above average defender. He has a high IQ, and he has the length to, you know, get steals and blocks. And I think once his body fills out, he could be an elite defender at the point guard position. So he, you know, I like Lonzo. He doesn't shoot a lot of mid-range shots, but I think that's kind of where the league is going. You know, he takes very stat-friendly, high-percentage shots. You know, he shoots mainly – most of his shots are threes or they're at the rim, which he still needs to get better at. But going forward, I like Lonzo. He's 20 years old, and he's shown a lot of resilience being able to bounce back after the slow start.
Yeah, exactly. Resilience is a good word with him because it's like he's had to fight through so much kind of other stuff other than basketball. And like Lonzo Ball, the basketball player, is you know, if we're just evaluating him as a rookie point guard, like he's definitely has a lot of upside. I mean, there's a reason why he was taken where he was in the draft. And like last night against that Spurs, he hit some clutch shots, which was good to see from him. He had a couple threes. And he's obviously known as a passer. That's good to hear about his defense. It's not something I'd paid a ton of attention to, but I'll be looking for that next time I watch him. Has he been playing a lot with Isaiah Thomas at all? And do you know?
Yes.
What do you know about that?
Yeah, I mean they're not always on the court together, but when they are, they kind of take turns with the ball in their hands. Both of them are good enough spot up shooters that they don't both need the ball in their hands to be efficient offensive players. Isaiah's been a lot better in LA, but Lonzo's also kind of a bigger point guard that if they get cross-matched and he gets, you know, if he starts to match up against twos on offense and on defense, you know, they're not crazy undersized. It's not like they're starting two guys that are, you know, 6 foot and who God knows how tall Isaiah Thomas is, but they have mix and match lineups with both of those guys, and you know, they've been a lot better. I mean, the Lakers, I think, have won 5 in a row now. So I don't think they're making the playoffs. I don't think they should make the playoffs, but I think they're trending in the right direction. You know, people were questioning Luke Walton, but they weren't supposed to be winning games, especially early on with the young guys. And they got rid of Clarkson. They've kind of made some major roster moves. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you bring up Luke Walton because, you know, I've heard there's a lot of jokes out there. Like, I heard somebody the other day on one of the Rangers podcasts. They were like, oh, you know, Quinn Snyder is just auditioning to be the Lakers' next head coach. Like, let's calm down with that. I feel like Luke Walton is a perfectly fine coach. He just doesn't have anything to work with. Like, he's trying to put in a good system there, but if you have this great system in place, even if you're getting all these great shots, if no one's making them, then it doesn't matter. You know, you're not – the coach can't make the ball go in. So, you know,
I well, I love Quinn Snyder. And, like, to your point, the Jazz were missing a lot of open shots earlier on. Then they get Gobert back, and now suddenly, you know, they've been on a tear, but they're still outside the playoff picture. And I think Snyder's one of the best coaches in the league. But at the end of the day, the coaches don't go out there and play. And, you know, the Lakers have been starting – their lineup is just packed with guys that are 22 and – 23 and younger, you know. Julius Randle is young. Brandon Ingram is young. Kuzma is a rookie. Lonzo Ball is a rookie. And a lot of these guys are getting 30-plus minutes. So young guys don't win. We've seen it time and time again. It takes a mix of young guys and veterans and experienced, you know, actually turn from being, you know, the process to actually winning games. So I think people need to chill out because I think Luke Walton is a good coach, and I think he's actually a good players coach too. I think the players respect him and like him, so I think LA will keep him going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the young guys. One other guy I like on LA is Josh Hart. He's, you know, he's not the flashiest player. He's not like, oh my God, he's going to be this stellar, you know, this star in the league, but he's really solid. And he knows his role, and he comes in, he can do some things. And then, so I like Josh Hart, and I just kind of felt like he's under talked about, obviously, because he doesn't have the pedigree of Lonzo or Ingram or even Randall for that matter as kind of a high lottery pick, but he's a battler, and he's something that they can keep going forward as a nice player off their bench if they need.
Yeah, him. I mean, he played for Villanova, right? I mean, he's out now. I think 4 to 6 weeks. I just read recently he had some surgery on his finger, but you know, they call him the Hulk. I think that's his nickname around there. I mean, he's built for a rookie. He's pretty built. And he has a feathery touch. I think they like Josh Hart a lot. I think that's part of the reason, part of why they let go of Clarkson, you know, among other reasons. I think they wanted to develop Josh Hart. They wanted to let Lonzo play minutes. So, yeah, it is interesting. And, you know, someone like Julius Randle, who a lot of players or a lot of analysts write off because he's kind of a throwback big. He doesn't space the floor. He doesn't, you know, block shots at a particularly high rate. He's got, you know, not a great wingspan, but that guy plays hard, and when he plays hard, he's hard to stop. So I think, you know, Randall is an interesting player to monitor going forward. He had that procedure on his knee, but he's looked good since. He's having a really underrated good year for the Lakers.
Yeah, you've long been like a huge fan of Julius Randle. I know that just talking to you over the years. Where do you think that Randall? Because he's a free agent, I'm not sure that the Lakers are going to be his next team. Where do you see him as a fit going forward? Because, like you mentioned, there are some limitations about what he can be in the modern NBA, but he is also an effective player. So where do you see him? What kind of role do you see him in?
When is his contract up? Remind me.
His contract is up after this season. And so they could maybe resign him, but depending on where they're going.
I think he'll field offers from other teams. He's 23 years old. It's kind of what team wants to take a shot on someone like him. I think if he's in a bad system, he's kind of an energy guy. And if he's in a bad team in a city that he doesn't like, he's the type of guy that can, you know, play with lower energy. And do you know what I mean? I feel like because he's in LA, it's his contract year. He's playing with a vengeance this year. I just worry that if he goes to Sacramento, is he still the same Julius Randle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that contract year point is interesting because he didn't reach a contract extension before the season. So most guys on their rookie contract before their fourth season, they can reach an extension. That's typically how it's done. But the Lakers didn't sign him, and they tried to keep some flexibility with their cap. He's an interesting player. It's too bad that he's not a little taller, because if he was a little taller, he would be absolutely dominant because he rebounds the hell out of the ball. And he's just so forceful the way he plays, but he's, you know, 6'9", so it's a little tougher for him.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's per 36. It's not the end all be all, but it's like he would be averaging 22 and 12, shooting 56% from the floor, blocking a shot per game. He's interesting. He's still only 23. I don't know what team would be taking a shot on him. You know. Hopefully you have a big man that can shoot threes. It kind of works in LA with Brooke Lopez.
Right.
He can kind of be the more, the floor spacer and let Julius Randle work inside. So I don't know what team would work for Randle. I'm trying to think about how many teams have, you know, elite shooters at the center position.
It's hard. Not many. So the player that you want to pair him with, right? The player you want to pair him with is a shot blocking center. That also hit threes, right? And there's just only five of those.
How many Miles Turners are out there? And Miles Turner is a guy like that. They already have Sabonis off the bench. Sabonis is kind of that Julius Randle role, you know?
Yeah, Sabonis is bigger than Julius Randle. But exactly, there's only like five of Miles Turners in the league, right? And, you know, one of them, Porzingis. He's guys that can stretch out the floor but also give you defensive impact in the paint. That would be the ideal guy to pair him with, but that's easier said than done.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about it right now. Memphis, you know, maybe Memphis is looking to bolster their roster.
That's an interesting call, actually. I kind of like that. It's like you know, if he slides in next to Gasol, and he kind of fit, he seems like a Memphis player, right? Like this kind of gritty, tough.
New age Debo.
New age Debo, yeah. Why not?
I mean, it'll be interesting. Memphis is another interesting situation. They still have Chandler Parsons on the books. Mike Conley got paid that $130 million for Mike Conley. I know Parsons was part of that terrible 2016 class. I'm not saying he's a terrible player, and you know he's earned the money he got, but going forward he is he's handcuffing the Grizzlies next couple years for sure.
Yeah, it is with Chandler Parsons. Like he makes so much sense for them as like a player on the wing next to Gasol, and Conley is kind of a shooter. I was kind of doing a dive into this the other day, and you know the season before he came to Memphis, he was 27 years old in Dallas. He shot 41% from three, so that makes a lot of sense. And you know, shooting is hard to come by in the NBA, particularly for the Grizzlies, who have had trouble with that for how long now? Forever. But he signed that 4-year, $94 million contract. That's a lot of money to be paying him. Real briefly, you want me to run down some of those 2016 contracts for you? Because there are some real albatrosses.
You might be scaring me away. I don't want to have nightmares tonight, but yeah, go ahead.
Mitch Kupchak will be having some nightmares as well. The biggest one, Nicholas Batum, he signed a 5-year, $120 million deal. That's not horrible. I mean, that's a lot of money for Nicholas Batum, and it pays him for a while, but he's a solid player, you know. That's a lot of money to be paying Nicholas Batum for what he does. Chandler Parsons, 4 years, 94. I mentioned that. Joakim Noah, 4 years, $72 million. That's a, thanks for Phil Jackson for that one. Luol Deng, 4 years, $72 million. Evan Turner, 4 years, $70 million. Bismack Biyombo, 4 years, $68 million. Jan Mahimi, 4 years, $64 million. Timofey Mozgov, 4 years, $64 million. I mean, some of these contracts, it's like, what are they paying these guys for? But holy moly.
How many minutes has Joakim Noah been on the floor for New York this season?
Barely at all. I mean, he's played 53 games with the Knicks, and I don't think he's played more than one this season. So, like, that's not a lot of production for what they're paying him.
Yeah, I could count his minutes on my hand, and I know he got into a scuffle with Hornacek, with their head coach. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I love Noah. When Noah was on the Bulls, people forget. I mean, now he's kind of turned into this bad contract guy, but before that, he was defensive player of the year. Did he win one?
I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, Joakim Noah. He was such a crucial player for them.
He was the ultimate team guy. You know, they had Derrick Rose. They had a young Joakim Noah that could block shots, and he was one of the best passing big men in the league. Then at some point, he just forgot how to make layups, and it got worse and worse. He was kind of spiraled out of control. But he was one of my favorite players in the league. He actually was. You know, I watched a lot of Chicago games, and I liked his energy. He also had one of the best celebrations ever. He was firing up his guns after making free throws and mid-range jump shots, and he had that wind-up and that curveball that was going in, but he was fun to watch. I like Joakim Noah a lot.
Yeah, that curveball shot, that was so unique, but I was just looking at it right now. Two-time All-Star, he won a Defensive Player of the Year. I remember, I mean, those Chicago teams with young Derrick Rose. I mean, remember young Derrick Rose, like pre-injury Derrick Rose? They had Joakim Noah, who was a defensive stalwart. Pau Gasol, like they had Taj Gibson, they had all these guys. It's crazy to see that they kind of no longer matter anymore, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it shows what injuries to your best player really derail a franchise. Also, Thibodeau does kind of run his guys into the ground, but, you know, Jimmy Butler just went down, and even when I was watching Jimmy Butler earlier on, he seemed like he lost a little bit of explosiveness. He was playing major minutes. Maybe he was playing on partial injuries. They didn't want to sit him out, but it remains to be seen whether or not how minutes affect players' health, you know, because the Warriors have been great at monitoring health and minutes. You know, they'll rest their guys in the fourth quarter, but Curry still goes down with ankle injuries, and you had that fluke Durant knee injury last year. So That's also an interesting, there's kind of an old school versus new school mentality when it comes to minutes. I know Van Gundy is very vocal about his, you know, oh, come on, let the guys play. These guys are making millions of dollars. You know, he kind of goes on these tirades, but he has a point too, because the people are getting injured regardless. You know, there's guys that are playing 25, 30 minutes a night, resting the fourth quarter, and they still get hurt. You know, Wiggins and Towns have been playing every game since their rookie year, and they're playing major minutes, and they haven't gotten hurt. So maybe there is no rhyme or reason to it, but I'd like to think that the new school thought of resting guys and managing the workload, you know, Popovich kind of introduced it, and the Warriors have embraced it. So that's, you know, that's another interesting topic of conversation. What do you think about that?
About minutes load and this whole, like, load management stuff? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
It is. I think it makes sense, right? And there's just too much science out there right now to suggest that, like, you have to limit the workload. And you know, we all know it. You play basketball, I play basketball. Like, it's taxing on your body. And I wouldn't claim to know as much about basketball as Tom Thibodeau, but it does seem that, you know, he pushes his guy hard, and their minutes, you know, his players are consistently among the league leaders in minutes played. And I think one of the teams that you saw early on with Jason Kidd was playing Giannis and Middleton. Both of them were among the league leaders in minutes played. And then, you know, out goes Jay Kidd, and suddenly Giannis's minutes have gone down since then. And he also had that knee thing that he's battling. So yeah, I'm more on the side of caution with teams, especially if you're going to be playing in the playoffs like the Warriors or the Spurs intend to be. So that's where I stand on that.
Yeah. But I mean, you could see, you know, just to play devil's advocate, you could see the other side. Cause there are teams that don't rest their guys. It doesn't seem like there's a correlation. I mean, there should be, and I think science is telling us there is, and maybe there is, but don't you agree that it's kind of spotty in terms of, you know, teams that do rest their guys still have guys that go down with injuries?
Exactly. Yeah.
Tony Parker gets hurt in San Antonio. Like I said, you know, the Warriors guys have gotten hurt. James Harden has been an Iron Man, and he hasn't really been injured. He was injured a little bit this year, but he plays major minutes. You know, D'Antoni almost, it kind of has an old school mindset, it seems like. You know, he's not resting his guys that much. He lets James Harden go out and compete for the MVP title. So I totally agree, but I almost think maybe people have gone a little too far, and it is more nuanced than that. And, you know, sometimes injuries are, you know, fluke. So, it's interesting.
I think it's a classic kind of old school versus new school debate, right? You know, kind of the old guard says this, the new guard says that, and how do teams find a happy medium is something to look for. But I think that's probably enough for now.
Yeah.
That'll do it for another edition of the 2-for-1 Hoops podcast. Be sure to check us out on SoundCloud if you dig what you're hearing. Maybe drop us a subscribe if you want to ensure you never miss a podcast from us. And we'd love to hear any feedback you guys have out there. But thanks for talking with me today, Tristan. It was a great conversation as always. And you got any final thoughts for us?
No, yeah, I was just going to say thanks for putting this together. You know, if we have any viewers that want to give us an idea for our next podcast, they can either comment here on the podcast page or send us a message on SoundCloud, or they can also find us on YouTube and subscribe to us there. So,
Twitter, 2-for-1 Hoops, any of these areas, if people want to hear mailbag questions or anything, we're open to that. So let us know, and we'll let it go on that. So thanks for speaking, Tristan, and have a great rest of your day.
All right, Park. Talk soon.